Good evening, and thank you for joining us for Mental Health Let's Talk About It. I am your host, Charlene Pickram, the owner of PIC Empowerment, and you're tuned into CIOE 97.5 Community Radio. And this evening we have Grant Hatcher, who is a hypnotherapist and meditation instructor. So we're going to be taking a look at exactly what that looks like. And we're also going to talk about toxic masculinity, which Grant has done a video on in the past and I was very impressed with. So I want him to share a little bit with you. So welcome, Grant.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So why don't you give us a little background about you? So how did you become a hypnotherapist and meditation instructor?
Well, it was a bit of a journey. It definitely wasn't something I imagined doing when I was a kid, thinking, you know, I can't wait to be a meditation instructor growing up in a small town in Cape Breton. But I went to university and studied psychology because I was always interested in humans and why we did what we did. And I was really looking forward to going on and doing my master's in university, but just decided to take a little break. And within that break, you know, that's when I started to practice meditation a little bit on my own, just through reading books and things like that. I didn't know what I was actually doing or if I was doing it right. But I knew there was something there because, like, I could feel there was something there.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, just started talking to like-minded people that were doing it. And eventually, it was just really randomly, I can't even really remember where I was, and I just heard the announcement that there was going to be hypnotherapy training. And I thought, well, geez, that sounds kind of cool. That's honestly what I thought at first. I was like, that just sounds kind of neat to learn how to do this, because it always fascinated me, you know, seeing the stage hypnotists and what they did and how it worked and things like that.
Yeah.
So I eventually signed up for this course, and it was a summer-long course, and we did it over the weekends. So it was 8 hours every Saturday and Sunday, I think it was, for a whole summer.
Yeah.
And we trained, and a lot of it was learning to hypnotize each other. So it was just really hands-on. We learned a bit about the history and things like that, but it was just, most of it was just learning to hypnotize each other and get used to that feeling. And then right after that, I traveled to Thailand, and I had no goals. I didn't know where I was actually going to go. I honestly looked up Thailand on a map 2 days before I left, and the only thing I wanted to do was take to go into a meditation retreat. And through a really, really interesting kind of connection, I found a cool retreat that I went to, and it was 7 days of silence, and we got training from our monk every day. And that's when I, you know, but midway through that retreat, I was like, okay, I want to teach this stuff back at home because I know we need it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're always so fast-paced, on the go all the time, so we just need that little bit of time to slow down. So that's kind of how I first walked into doing all this stuff. So
yeah, so very much spoke to you in the moment and kind of led you itself.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, like I've always loosely planned and had ideas about stuff, but it's like it kind of pulled me there on its own. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. So what have you done since then, since receiving your training, to kind of get you into Nova Scotia and educating people?
Well, the first thing, well, it all actually happened during the meditation retreat. So, I mean, imagine literally being in the middle of the jungle on an island in Thailand over Christmas. So the first time away from home for Christmas, and here I was in the middle of the jungle. It was funny, actually, during Christmas night, fireworks were going off in the town, and I couldn't even understand why. And then I realized, oh, yeah, it's Christmas time. But just had a lot of time to sit and think and be with myself, and realizing I wanted to do meditation back home, and the first idea was to open a similar retreat like that in Cape Breton. But that was pretty large scale, and I thought, well, that might be something further down the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was pretty established in Halifax. I went to university there. So I thought, I'll start in Halifax and create my own little center and maybe have a little gift shop and offer yoga and all these different things. And, you know, as I started thinking about that, it was almost more than what I didn't know how to run a business. I didn't know how to do those things and stuff like that. So again, like you said, I just kind of happened where I knew this guy that I met one time, And so I messaged him on Facebook. I was like, listen, man, like I'm kind of interested in meditation. I know you are a little bit, but I don't know. I kind of want to start my own little center. And he's like, yeah, we're already starting a center. We need another partner. You're on board. And so I was like, so this was literally a couple of days after the retreat.
Yeah.
And so when I was in Cambodia at the time, so I just left Thailand and I messaged him. And then I literally moved back to Halifax about a month later and we moved in together and we started our own little yoga and meditation studio. And so that's kind of the first in that I got with Halifax and kind of beginning to learn and to teach this stuff a little more to people. So
And I was there.
I went to
your little gift shop.
Yeah, we came in a little chat in the gift shop. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so you've been working with some of the universities as well?
Yeah. So basically what happened at the center, it was, a lot of us there, a lot of us were doing it for the first time. So I remember teaching my first meditation class and I was scared to death because it was a really vulnerable thing to be like, okay, I'm going to try to teach somebody meditation now, or not teach them necessarily, but lead them into a meditation.
Yes, exactly.
So for me, it was really learning how to get comfortable with this trade and really to get comfortable with doing this for people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I got my confidence and my practice there. And that same guy that I worked with, him and I began to do meditations in universities. It started at Dalhousie. Actually, it started at NSCC. It was the first place we got in, and a friend of ours worked there and approached us and asked us to start doing meditations there, which is, the program is still running every Wednesday. They have alternating meditation instructors there.
Awesome.
At the IT campus, and then we've since done them at Dalhousie and the Waterfront campus. I've done them at Mount St. Vincent over the fall and winter. And another friend of mine has done them at St. Mary's as well. So it's something that's, it's out there for sure. And we're offering it to students and staff. So.
Yeah. And so the purpose behind that, so why are you going in? What need are you fulfilling for these students?
Well, for me, honestly, one of my big goals was to go back to Mount St. Vincent and offer this because that's where I went to university and did my undergrad in psychology. And just knowing the demands that are on students and professors as well, they have a heavy workload themselves, to offer them this tool that they can use, So like the classes are usually once a week, but my goal was to kind of give them as many of the skills and tools that I've learned so that when they're away from, the meditation room, that they can still apply these like calming, relaxing techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people think is like, oh, I don't got time for meditation. I don't got time for that. But if you take 5 minutes,
yeah,
it's going to bring you into a calmer state so that you're more focused and able to get more done with the time that you do have. So that was kind of the goal, was to give these, anybody who was willing to listen, these tools to help them relax and, as this show is all about, to help with mental health, because there's a serious, serious lack of services.
Mm-hmm.
We're better than we have ever been, but it's, you still hear people waiting a very long time to get the help. So it's almost like I thought meditation could provide a buffer sort of for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the empowerment piece.
Mm-hmm.
You're providing a service and a potential strategy that may work for someone.
Right.
And we've talked about that before, that it may not work for everybody.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
But to have that opportunity to come in and try.
Right. Yeah.
And even if you don't get the full meditation, you still get some kind of strategies to calm oneself down.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. The biggest thing has been breaking down the stigma and the stereotypes and trying to explain to them what meditation actually is,
Mm.
Because everybody's like, well, I can't quiet my thoughts. And I say, it's not necessarily about that. It's about being a little more comfortable with your thoughts and, gaining a little more control in there instead of being, sort of taken away by your thoughts and feelings,
So. Yeah. And it is very much the education piece. And you and I've had this conversation before that, for me with the social emotional intelligence, it's again, the lack of awareness of how it can benefit you in your day to day life.
Right. Yeah.
And so once you've shared that awareness, it's deciding, does it work for you or does it not work for you?
Right. That's exactly it. And, you know, and that's what I try to be as open as possible. You know, I'm only there talking and recommending things to people, but I'm like, explore, you know what I mean? Have fun with it. This doesn't have to be anything, you know, super difficult. Just see what works for you, what doesn't work for you. And the whole time, especially if it's your first time meditating, I'm just extremely encouraging the whole time. And just really, it's almost like helping the person explore themselves maybe in a different way, and but doing it with complete zero judgment.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to do wrong. And then from there, I find they can kind of let go, and it usually, they'll find something in there.
Yeah.
You know, and that it's usually when we talk about it afterwards that they're like, oh, okay, I understand what that was. And then that's when you really get the cool discussions, when the class starts talking and be like, oh, yeah, yeah, I understand. Yeah, yeah, that's what I felt too, or I felt this. So,
yeah, and that shared experience or feeling that has occurred within that group.
Right.
That makes it, breaks the stigma.
Yep.
And helps people understand that that's part of the process.
Right, absolutely, yeah. And there's something to be said about sitting in a group as well. It's a different experience when you're meditating alone in silence versus listening to a YouTube video versus being in a class in silence versus being in a class when somebody's guiding you. They're all different experiences, and they all have their own different sort of energy. None of them is necessarily better or worse than the other, but you'll notice, you know, I have so many people that say, oh yeah, I forgot what it was like because I've been just doing it on my own for so long to come and have somebody guide me and be in a class. And that, you know, that group feeling of doing it together is a really powerful experience.
Yeah, the energy would be very different. And even just listening to another person breathe.
Right.
Are you going to get into that same rhythm?
Yeah, all sorts of that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's great. And you know, you have that very not, I feel anyway, a very non-judgmental approach. You're very open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is very much about that person.
Right.
What are you going to get out of it?
Right.
And I'm just here as a guide.
Right, and that's it. I'm just talking. They're just listening, and then they're the ones actually having the experience. We're in it together, just like you and I are sitting here doing this together.
Yeah.
But you're having your own experience. I'm having my own experience. Whoever's going to be listening is having their own experience. But we're all kind of connected in some way. So, but I always encourage the person, you know, you're just listening to my words. At the end of the day, you're the one following it and making the changes inside of yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one who just took five deep breaths and felt yourself relax. You're the one who just, you know, paid attention to your arm and actually noticed that your arm could relax and things like that. So, so it's yeah, I'm there hosting it, but it's, you know, I can't take any credit for it at all. It's just, you know, I'm just, you know.
A little bit.
Well, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, it's, I try to, like you said, be as empowering as possible.
Yeah.
Me and my friend, the guy that I said, his name is Josh Coleman, who started the center together. There's a few others involved as well, but our goal was always to kind of basically be irrelevant at some point. You know, we don't want to be doing this for ourselves. You know, at the end of the day, it'd be really nice if it just became a normal thing, and then we could move on to something else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like that might happen within our lifetime, I have no idea, but our goal was to teach what we can teach now, but then evolve upon that as we go down the road, to hope that what we're teaching now is so, becomes so normal that it's that it, we don't even need to be talking about it anymore. So,
yeah, we can only hope.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Grant Hatcher, who is a hypnotherapist and meditation instructor, and we'll see what else he has to say about how this hypnotherapy and meditation can benefit us. We'll be back in a moment. Thank you for staying tuned in to Mental Health Let's Talk About It. I'm Charlene Pickram, and we are talking with Grant Hatcher, who is a hypnotherapist and meditation instructor. And so, Grant, what does hypnotherapy and meditation do for us physically? So in our brain and in our body?
Yeah, that's a really good question. When I studied psychology at university, I did it, you know, everybody called psychology sort of like the softer science, because the harder science was chemistry and math and, you know, where 2 + 2 = 4, you know what I mean? Whereas with psychology, you could say, well, you have this trait and you have that trait, but who the heck actually knows? Because you're a human being, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, but it was still important to study that. But I studied as a science, so I had a biology minor as well. So I balance, and I think things like meditation and, you know, traditional science of the Western world go hand in hand together. So, and I think that's where, you know, research and things like that are really starting to nail down some really interesting things. And as you asked with the question, how does it change our physical body? The big thing and the big word that I'll use that'll explain all this is called neuroplasticity. So basically what that means is that our brain, is able to kind of change at any time. It was originally believed that once you were about 20 years old that you had what you had, and it just basically deteriorated from that. It was kind of like good luck.
Scary.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, which is, and then Matt, this is what doctors are telling people, you know what I mean? This is what, you know, so, but recent research is really showing that that's not the case. There's, you know, you're at your optimal level of development when you're, you know, growing up, because your brain is super plastic then. And there's some things that are really difficult to learn after certain points.
Yes.
But in general, we can, our brain is extremely adaptive, and it can make itself work in certain ways. And, one example was of this man. He was about 60 years old, and he had a stroke, and he was a doctor, he was a pretty prestigious man, and, you know, basically they did his 2 weeks of rehab in the hospital, a mandatory rehab that they would do, and he still couldn't move or function, and the doctor said, you know, that's it, like, you know, he's done, there's no recovery, this is, you know, it. But his sons were also doctors, and so they just didn't want to give up on dad. And so they started this regime with him where he would start washing dishes in the morning, and he would scrub, you know, to the left for a week straight. And then he would scrub to the right for a week straight. And they had him outside crawling in the garden, and all the neighbors thought, my God, you can't have that prestigious man crawling around in the garden. That's embarrassing to his character and all this stuff. But eventually what happened was, He fully recovered. So he was able to move, and he was doing all these things, and he started lecturing again at university when doctors had wrote him off, and he actually ended up dying of a heart attack hiking a mountain, which is kind of, I don't know what you want to say about that, but
irony.
Yeah. But he wasn't supposed to be able to move at all anymore. So the fact that he got there, and when he did die, they wonder, well, what happened in his brain? So they did the autopsy on him, and the question was, the place that was in control of motor functions where his stroke happened, did that place heal, or what happened? So what they found actually was that that place didn't heal at all. So that place was still pretty much destroyed, but what happened was other parts of his brain rewired and took over that process and filled in. So that's what we're talking about when it comes to neuroplasticity, that you are able to do these things that can help change your mind and even your body too. So with meditation and hypnosis, what we're doing is we're getting ourselves into a nice relaxed state. And then through that relaxed state, we might be able to start to sort of reprogram some of these things. So just like, you know, lifting a weight over and over, you'll build that muscle over time. The same thing happens when you have that negative thought over and over. It becomes easier and easier to have that thought because those connections in the brain get stronger and stronger and stronger. But with meditation, you can get into this place where, you know, the thoughts are still there, but you're not flowing with them as much. So you're not feeding them. I guess that would be the best way
to
kind of explain
it.
You're not feeding the thoughts. So from that space, you may be able to start moving your energy and your awareness into a different thought, creating a new pathway, working out a new muscle in the brain, essentially. And that's where that neuroplasticity comes in. So just the act of meditating, the pure, simple act of letting go, even though you might still have your thoughts, even though you still might have feelings, but not feeding them, that in itself is extremely powerful. It starts to create this new space in your mind. But then once you're able to get there a little bit, then you can start creating new ones. And that's when real big change can begin to happen.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I love how you described it about the paths, because that's how I describe it as well, for mindful awareness of how you're thinking.
Yeah.
You know, can you stop it before you, you know, plod down that path again and make it even more accessible?
Yeah.
And so how do you find another path and start cutting down all the neural stuff and make it strong? And so that's a great way to describe it.
Right. And that's literally what's happening in your brain, is that this neuron connects to that neuron, connects to that one. Mm. And then it becomes easier and easier for those neurons to communicate if you keep firing it down that pathway. So then it becomes automatic, and you're having those thoughts before you even realize it. So
exactly.
Like you said, the first step is to just catch yourself, and you are, it's like creating new paths, like little rivers going in a new direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was funny how you described about the doctor, because recently I just watched a video regarding NHL players who have had concussions, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and how they're using this neuroplasticity to build different areas in the brain to support those damaged
areas.
That's
really cool. I haven't heard about that. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, neuroplasticity is just blowing up.
Yeah.
And just that awareness that, again, like everything, if you're willing to put the work into it and you have the proper person to guide you, you can overcome so much.
And I think that's the most important thing that you said there, is that you got to put the work in. It's not magic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Hypnotherapy is not magic. Meditation is not magic. Sometimes pretty cool magical things happen. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you still have to apply it. And, or it won't work. You know, it needs to be consistent. It's just like exercise. Like, you're not going to go do one workout and then get in shape. You know, you got to start, you got to do this over and over and over. You know, for some people, you can get it right away. And then, you'll get to that point in meditation where you know what it's like to quiet your thoughts. But that's not the goal at all. Mm. The real meditation is when you're doing it when you don't want to do it, when you're still doing it when you have distractions, when you're doing it when your mind isn't quieting down. That's when the real work comes in, and that's, you know, when the real changes happen. So, so many people, will come to me for hypnotherapy looking for a miracle to happen, what I mean? And, I'm not going to deny that it can't happen, but I'd be real with them and say, listen, this works, but you gotta help make it work too, So this, at the end of the day, it comes down to you, and you gotta want this change. And a lot of people don't want to put that work in. So that's the big difference.
And that seems to be the common denominator with many strategies, is that you have to be invested in the process, and you have to be the one to do it. And in our world currently, that's very difficult for a lot of people, because they're looking for that miracle cure.
We're conditioned to have these instant gratification things, through Facebook, and social media. They're great tools when used in certain ways, but we're used to, I wonder what this is. I'll Google it and you'll find the answer right away. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we're used to this world where we get what we want almost right away. We can go out and get a coffee anywhere. So we can go out and do this. We can order food from our phone. We can do whatever we want in our hands, basically. Yeah. But when it comes to changing ourselves, it just doesn't work that way. You know, you might have an amazing insight and see the answer to your problem, but to make the work that connects that answer to who you are, that's where the work comes in. And it's not always pretty. And it's a lot of it. That's life, I guess.
And again, it's finding a strategy that works for you, but also finding the person that you feel comfortable enough to guide you.
Right.
To learn how to do that strategy.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
And so, when I had, Andrea Shudin, who's my yoga instructor, we talked about that sometimes you may want to do yoga or you may want to do meditation, and you go to your first class and you're like, I don't really like this person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It doesn't, the energy doesn't. Yep. And so, my advice is always, well, try somebody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I met this woman a week or two ago, and she said she was 70 or 80 or something like that. I can't remember how old she was exactly.
Yeah.
And she was walking. And I had just started making changes in my life to become a little more physically fit because I went through it. I had an injury over Christmas, and I usually play a lot of basketball, but I hadn't been doing anything. So just the last month or two, really trying to get back into it. So I was kind of doing some push-ups and jogging out in the front courtyard area of our house, I guess you could explain it.
Yeah.
Some like grass and trees there and stuff. And she said, "Oh my goodness, I would love to have your energy," she said. And I was like, "Well, I'm trying to get back into it, actually." So then she kind of went on to explain she had a spinal injury and all these things in her whole life. And back when she was younger, you know, she was like, "Oh, I wouldn't do this in case I hurt my back. I wouldn't do this." So whereas now, you know, I think we're more encouraging people like that to strengthen themselves, you know,
exactly.
Because exercise, she said back then, didn't exist. We just didn't do it. You know,
yeah.
we just lived and that was it. It wasn't on anybody's radar. But she went to a yoga class because her friends had said it. And she said that was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, she did a little something and it kind of hurt her back a little bit. So she mentioned it to the instructor and they said, "Oh my God, well, don't do it." You know what I mean? Where she said that was kind of surprising. She said, "I thought they would give me another way to do it or something like that." And that's what I said. I said, you know, a good instructor would show you a way to do it or show you moves that would help you and be safe for you. And so she only did that one class and never ever went back when she could have been doing that for 10 years to help herself. So
yeah, chair yoga.
Yeah, you got to find the right place, right? She just went to her local rec center and gave it a shot and they told her to stop. So she did. So I ended up putting her in contact with a friend of mine to see if he could help her out. And yeah, I don't know if she ever ended up going or not. So, but,
yeah. Well, hey, you had a good conversation.
Yeah.
It made somebody's day, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. We had a great talk. Yeah. She was an awesome lady. Yeah. She was really funny.
Well, that's great. So, just to talk a little bit more about the neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a study done too regarding vacations.
Yeah.
So in the study, it actually identified, of course, you go on vacation, you know, you calm right down, blah, blah, blah. But as soon as you come back from vacation and you're right back at work, your levels go up.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And so with meditation, it shows that you can actually keep those levels down.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you're at work.
Right.
Or you're on vacation.
That's it, yeah. So in the study, and there's a bunch of research out there now showing these types of benefits, but this one in particular, you know, which totally makes sense, is why we go on vacation.
Yeah.
Because we want to get away from this stuff and take a break. And it really shows that it helps. You know, we start to relax, we're less stressed out, and, you know, in the physical body, in the brain, you know, the neurochemistry changes. But then once we're finished vacation, shortly after going back to work, like you said, all those the same things are there that were stressing us out before. So,
yeah.
But with meditation, it can bring on that same level of, you know, feeling calm and relaxed as the vacation, but it will continue as you go through work and as you still go through school, whatever it is you're doing in your normal life.
Mm-hmm.
Just 10 minutes a day, just simple meditation can help bring that in. And that's kind of, it helps bring you into that spot. You know, you're still having thoughts. Again, it's not about quieting your thoughts. It's not about quieting your feelings. It's about being in that place because life's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to teach my meditation, you know, it doesn't need to be a super quiet room because kids are going to be screaming later on. Anyways, dogs going to be barking. There's going to be traffic. So I'm not going to prepare you for this fake world.
Yes.
You know, I'm trying to prepare people to be able to bring this into their normal life.
Mm-hmm.
So while these things are going on, while you're having these thoughts, you're still able to be somewhat calm with it. Or basically the big thing is, like we said, not feeding it, not denying it either, though, not pretending like it's not there.
Yeah.
Because that's a dangerous thing to do as well.
Exactly.
But just to honor it. And then, you know, from that state, you're able to kind of take a little more control instead of sort of being the victim of your own circumstances.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue talking with Grant Hatcher about hypnotherapy and meditation. But I think we're going to bring in toxic masculinity in our next section. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Mental Health, Let's Talk About It. I'm Charlene Pickram, the owner of Pick Empowerment, and we've been talking with Grant Hatcher, who is a hypnotherapist and meditation instructor. And when I met Grant over a year ago, he did a video regarding toxic masculinity. And I was really blown away by his heroic vulnerability. That's what I called it. I was just really taken back by his willingness to put himself out there for the benefit of others. And so I want to give you this opportunity, Grant, to talk about toxic masculinity from your perspective.
No, yeah, that's exactly it. It is from my perspective. I'm by no means an expert on the topic. You know, there are, I'm sure, lots of people doing research on it and things like that. So everything I'm going to talk about is just from my personal take on it and what I understand it to be. And it's, you know, in the video, it was literally all about growing up in Cape Breton, in small town Cape Breton, and how there is this sort of presence of this really strong masculine characteristics where you always suck it up and you always push through and, you know, you don't got time to cry. You don't show your pain. You don't show your hurt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was growing up, I thought those were admirable things to do. I remember the first time when I chose not to cry when I got hurt, and mm-hmm. I was probably 9 or something like that. And I'm just remembering it hurting as it always did before. But I remember I don't need to cry. I can stop myself from crying right now if I wanted to. And I did. And so learning that holding in our emotions in that way is a very, it becomes a toxic thing.
Yeah.
To make a little light of it, you know, I always say we need to take emotional poops just like we take physical poops, because it's no good to hold that stuff in. You got to let it out. And eventually, what tends to happen with males is that it'll come out in really extreme ways and really, you know, aggressive ways and really hurtful ways, you know, a lot of time. And there's nobody to blame for that. It's just nobody knows how to do that yet. You know, that's why you're doing the work you're doing, why I'm doing the work I'm doing, so we can learn to process these emotions.
Yeah.
But the video you're referring to, I was sitting in a cafe with a friend of mine, and she said that a guy she knows from Newfoundland, who was, I think he was out west and working out west and got involved in drugs and everything, made a video about how he was starting to become sober. And but the only reason he found out, he didn't know at the time why he was using these drugs and alcohol, is because he didn't know how to process his emotions. And he was using these things to kind of, to just be okay, to try to be okay. And that's, you know, as soon as she said that, I was like, whoa. I was like, I can relate to that so much from growing up in Cape Breton and, you know, having, when I actually talked about it, every man that lived close to me at some point struggled with alcohol, or currently still did. And again, not to blame them. It's not their fault. It's just what they were taught to do. It's what they learned to do. And so in the video, I talk about how I had people in my family who struggled with this, you know what I mean? And my father himself struggled with alcohol and his emotions and didn't properly know how to handle them, to the point where he did actually choose to take his own life. And he was a normal man. He was, when it happened to the community, everybody was extremely shocked, you know, but we saw what was going on in the background.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what inspired me, I guess, to kind of take this path and do the work that I want to do, you know, because I know that we can help each other and I know that we can be better. And it starts with little talks like this. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I know, you know, we're talking about toxic masculinity, but it does overshadow females as well.
Because anybody can be masculine, and so it tends to be traditionally with males.
Exactly.
And I think if I try to understand it is, imagine growing up in Cape Breton or anywhere in Nova Scotia or Atlantic Canada 500 years ago, and you know, a snowstorm was coming, and you didn't quite have all your wood ready, you didn't have enough food, and then your little brother Tommy hurt your feelings, you know. You know, you don't got time to talk about that, you know what I mean? We got to get the wood ready, we got to live, we got to survive. That can take a background seat for now.
Yes.
So I think it comes from our history of years and decades and centuries of just trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening now is that, yeah, we're still trying to pay bills, we're still trying to pay groceries, but we're definitely more comfortable now than we ever have been,
mm-hmm.
For the most part. So what's happening now is that these years and centuries of repressed emotions that never got expressed are finally coming to the surface, and we're finally starting to learn to process these things, because what your great-great-great-grandfather or great-great-grandmother didn't deal with, it's been passed on from her children to theirs to you now.
The nurture.
Nurture and nature. I think, you know, she or he would have behaved differently because they were holding on to this thing, which then would affect their children and everybody mm-hmm. around them. But I think it also affected their DNA in some way. And this is just hypothetical, but I mean,
it's not, because there is evidence-based research that indicates that nurture over long, you know, generational impacts does impact your genes.
Exactly. And it just makes common sense anyways to think that way. But it would, And so it's both of those things are happening. So it seems like, and now is the time where this stuff is coming up. And like you said, it's not just in men, just traditionally, that's kind of where, but it's affected everybody. It's affected women. And I think if I try to imagine, you know, it is time for the divine feminine to kind of step up and regain its role in society. But it's also for you know, the masculine to reclaim itself, whether you're a man or a woman or whatever you identify as, that's fine. But the healthy masculine, not this extreme over the top. You know, there are situations when that's needed, but it doesn't need to be on all the time.
No, exactly. And it's so important for people to realize that emotions and feelings, they're not good or bad.
No.
Although as a society, we do label them as such, which is part of the problem we're creating for not only ourselves but our kids, because we say, well, that's a bad feeling.
Right.
Well, no, all feelings have purpose.
Right.
And you have to take the time to sit with them.
Right.
And recognize why you're feeling them.
Right.
But not get stuck in them.
Yeah.
Learn from them, recognize them, and then move forward.
Right. And that's where your expertise kind of ties really nicely with mine, because you have the emotional expertise, whereas mine is about getting you into a place where you're calm and relaxed enough to make those decisions. So with the knowledge of what you have with the emotions and combined with a little meditation, I'm sure it would make a big difference for some people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to be quiet enough that you can be aware of the emotion. Because like you said, we stuff it down so much that we don't even know how we feel anymore.
Yeah, we don't know.
It's like a cauldron of, okay, these are all my feelings.
Yeah.
Let's just mix them together.
Yeah.
And for some people, you know, let's freeze it.
Right. Yeah.
Let's never even look at it. Let's not understand where these feelings are coming from. And that could be generationally what we're taught.
Yeah.
Or it could be what we're experiencing right in the moment.
Definitely both. Yeah. Some sort of combination of both from any given moment. And I think there's something to be said that our society doesn't do a great job of allowing us to process those emotions, because, you know, if I were to dig deep into all my emotions and let them out right now, one, I'd be somewhat embarrassed to do it on this radio show. Two, I got things I need to do later today, and it's going to be difficult to go about the rest of my day because I would need more time, you know? So that's kind of where it comes back to why we're doing this work in the first place, is to try to provide space for ourselves to feel these things, because, you know, you're expected to go into work and be smiling and happy. And, you know, we're just learning that there's a whole other level of health in the mental health and emotional health that's just as important, if not more important, than physical health.
Yeah, and not only being able to accept it in self, but to accept it in others and allow people to have that space to feel the way they're feeling in the moment.
Exactly. I remember my cousin, and there was this boy that grew up around us who was always really emotional, and a lot of people picked on him and things like that. And my cousin always had a hard time with him and stuff like that. And I remember talking to my cousin not too long ago, and he was saying, you know what? He's like, I always gave this person a hard time. He's like, but I think he truly taught me what it was like about emotions, because, you know, all the other male role models around me were just repressed, holding on to these things. So this little boy who went, you know, through a really difficult time because of growing up in small town Cape Breton and being such an emotional child. But he actually, like you said, he taught my cousin how to be emotional and to kind of bring back the toxic masculinity. I was at one of my great uncle's wedding, or sorry, his funeral. And he died, you know, when he was around 70 or so. And, but again, just like a generational alcoholic who would, you know, get up and drink. And, you know, I was talking to my cousin. I said, you know, I don't know how they can do it, because the idea, whenever I drink and I feel hungover the next day, the last thing I want to do is drink again. The last thing I ever want to do is do that. So that these guys would get up and do something like that. I, you know, to me, it was almost admirable in some way. Like, I was like, whoa, he's so strong. And my cousin said to me, he's like, strong. He's like, that's got to be the weakest thing, the fact that that's what he had to do in order to just not express his emotions, you know, that the harder emotions that he has, that's what he had to revert to. And again, there's no blame here. It's just that's what they learned, and that's what we learned, you know. So
yeah, until you're provided another strategy to express self or deal with, or... it's very hard to give up what you know.
Absolutely. And I am learning this as we go too. I have all of these characteristics in their own version inside of myself, and I would never pretend to be, maybe at some point I thought it was, but I'm not better than anybody else in any way with any of these things. And I'm still learning, and I'm still growing, and trying to be as honest as possible as I go through those experiences and sharing them. And, you know, I think before I've made the mistake of realizing what I needed to change, but then, as we talked about before, not necessarily putting all the work in to make that change. So that's where I'm really trying to make the difference, is putting the extra work in. And it's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's a lifelong process, and it's difficult. So.
And you know what? That's, you know, having compassion and empathy for self and the others, you know, that you're coming into contact with. But I think what is so essential about what you were saying, Grant, is, and it's so important to share with other people, is that it is hard.
Yeah.
That's why everybody's not doing it.
No, I know. Yeah, yeah. It's so difficult. It's so, so difficult. And, you know, it takes time. It takes effort. And it's going to get messy. And people are scared. They're really scared about what's going to come up and what that's going to mean. And, you know, but it's... the best metaphor I've ever heard is that, you know, if you're walking through the woods and you got a splinter in your finger, what would you do? What would you do if you got a splinter in your finger?
I would stop and take the time to get that splinter out.
Exactly.
Because I know it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, exactly. You know, with our emotions, though, we don't give our time to take that emotional splinter out. And so, you know, imagine if you kept it in, you'd have to start to walk funny and hold your arm a different way so you didn't bump into it anymore. Maybe you stopped going to dances because you were scared somebody's going to bump that splinter. Or you got to make your own special harness in your bed so you don't roll over on that splinter. We're doing those things with our emotional splinters. We avoid this situation now because it might trigger this feeling inside of us because we've never properly given it the time to come out and heal. So we're holding on to these things that scare the crap out of us. But at the end of the day, it's always better to let it out, even though it's difficult. And we're just learning how to do that safely now. So
yeah, that's fantastic. I love that metaphor.
It's really useful. Well, it's not mine. I stole it. So
very good. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll finish up our conversation with Grant Hatcher, who is a hypnotherapist and meditation instructor. And we'll see where the conversation leads us. In the final segment of Mental Health, Let's Talk About It on CIOE 97.5 FM, I will be discussing projects that Grant Hatcher has planned for himself and the hypnotherapy and meditation. So what do you got on the go? What are you thinking?
Well, right now I'm currently just running a little meditation program at the IWK. Every Monday, so I'm there, and I do 4 meditations for parents who are there with sick children on a volunteer basis, just to give this tool of meditation to the people who are in most need, in my mind. You know, when I envision doing this work, you know, I just picture hospitals and, like, not just parents and people, patients, but, you know, nurses and doctors, because they're really extremely, you know, overworked, and it's very difficult work. But yeah, so just provide that tool for them at the IWK. I do that there, teamed up with the Ronald McDonald House. So that's kind of where that in came through.
Yeah.
And really a natural flow too, just the contacted them and they were ready and we just launched right away. So we're looking to make that a little bigger, maybe offer it on different days, get other instructors in, you know, like I said earlier, to make this stuff a little more normal for these people.
Yeah.
Another project I am working on right now is mental training with sports. So literally combining two of my biggest passions in life. I love sports. I've always grown up a healthy outlet for that energy. You know what I mean? Finding those healthy outlets. But learning how, you know, we've really tackled physically training, getting ourselves in shape and all these things. And I think at the highest level of sports, when you get to the pro level, the mental aspect is really important. But it's not necessarily what we're taught in the early level sports and how to get your mind right. And not just that, but to get it into a place to really help yourself succeed. So a friend of mine, it's really in the infancy of creating a program to train. Our term is dedicated athletes. We want athletes who are really involved in their sport, because they're the ones who are going to want to apply these things. Like we said, it takes work. So we don't want, you know, we'll help anybody that we can, but at the end of the day, you got to want to make these changes. So our thing is to help these really dedicated athletes and their teens who are really dedicated to their sport. And we want to help them with their sport. Don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, we're also secretly kind of hoping that they'll have all these tools that they can use in their normal everyday life as well. So that's another thing. Always, you know, teaming up with universities, trying to get the meditations in there. I'm going to be starting up meditation classes at Mount St. Vincent again in the fall, which is open to staff, students, and public. So anybody can come and attend those classes, and they're quite affordable in terms of programs. And then just always making videos and things like that through my website, balancedtrance.com. You can find any of my services on there and contact information. I'm always taking on clients one-on-one. So where we do this work together, where I teach them meditation, use hypnotherapy, teach them self-hypnosis so they can learn that themselves, to make those sort of changes for themselves and just to help empower people.
You've done some stuff over, like, the phone as well. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I helped my mom quit smoking almost 2 years ago. It was actually through Facebook Messenger over the little call thing on there. So that was my first real go at it. And you know, when I first started hypnotherapy, you know, I wasn't imagining helping smokers necessarily. It was more like the emotional, mental stuff that we're talking about. But, you know, mom wanted to quit. So it was like, all right, well, let's do it. And so we went and I set up a program. And once a week, we were on the phone or on that messenger app. And by just over a month, I had her as a non-smoker. And it's been over a year now. So
Now that's a success story.
A complete success story. And it was probably one of the coolest ones to help my mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was really neat. But that was when I know that I can use hypnotherapy for different things like that, and it can really help, you know. But again, like, it did help her, but she was ready and she put in the work too. So that was, you know, it was a good team effort. And that's the way I see it. Whenever I work with anybody, it's a team effort. And I'm guiding you in the right directions, but it's up to you to take that path or not. And then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always my favorite to get a message from a client, you know, months down the road, saying, like, you know, just this perspective that you helped me see, it changed everything. You know what I mean? Because it's, when we're in hypnotherapy, we're in that person's world, and, you know, they have these conditioned thoughts and the pathways, like we were talking about, but I might put in a new pathway for them, you know, with their permission. I can't do or say anything they don't want me to do.
Yeah.
But to provide this suggestion, like, well, maybe you could look at things this way from now on. And that's that seed that they can kind of begin to water on their own. And then once they feed that, mm-hmm. you know, to hear from them a few months later to say, wow, you know, this is really helping me, you know, and that's mm-hmm. really cool. And that's always the most satisfying thing. Or, you know, that video, that toxic masculine video that I made, you know, I didn't know, I was just expressing my feelings in the time. And that literally went around the world. It, and, you know, it got over 20,000 views in a couple of days. And, you know, people from Ireland and South Africa and all these men were messaging me, even women too, saying like, oh my God, I can resonate with this so much. So that's the reward in doing this work for me, is hearing the stories of people who can relate and be like, yes, you're saying what I've been feeling, or, you know, because it was vulnerable to put myself out there and do this stuff, you know.
I wondered
what people back home would think, or I wondered what my friends would think, you know. And to the contrary, it's been, you know, these people who've been secretly messaging me saying, like, thank you. Like, thanks for doing that. Thanks for saying that. Because, you know, I've been thinking and feeling this. It just feels good to hear somebody else say it too. You know?
Oh, so. It feels so good to know we're not alone.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, I think at the end of the day, we just want to feel safe in processing and doing our thing and raising our little families, whether it's you and your cat or you by yourself or you and your 15 children, whatever that is. Everybody in the entire world just want that safety and respect to feel what they feel, and but to be safe while they're doing it as well, because we're always a little on edge with whether it's trying to make money or in some places in the world, you know, literally trying to survive, you know.
Yeah.
That safety is what we need. So
definitely. And and it is a perspective, you know, that psychological safety. Where can you find it so that you can grow and you can learn, and finding role models or instructors or, you know, friends who support you in your struggle. Yes, we struggle every day, but that development within the struggle.
Right.
Which is so key, because for me, I think that's the only way we truly stay happy.
Yeah.
And you talked about the seed, you know, planting the seed. Yeah. And I always talk about the manure pile.
Right.
Right? Yeah. We all have a manure pile. Yeah. It all stinks.
Yeah.
But that manure pile has value.
Right.
You know, and that's all the things that we, choices that we made that we weren't happy with, or things that happened to us that maybe we didn't have any control over.
Right.
Everybody has it.
Right.
So what are you going to do with that?
Right. Are you going to let it sit and fester, or are you going to throw some seeds in there and let them grow?
That's right.
Create some fresh life. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. So how can people reach you? What, I know you gave out your...
Honestly, the website is the best way. So www.balanced, B-A-L-A-N-C-E-D, trance, trance.com. Everything you need on there is what, you know, I got videos and I got blogs and I got, you know, description of my services, and then my phone number, my email, and everything is on there. Usually just shoot me an email and then we'll kind of discuss and to see what I can do. And then we kind of, I get a feel and get a little intake form from people. If we're going to be a one-on-one client, I also do lots of workshops and stuff too. So, I did a presentation, for Nova Scotia Fitness on meditation and how it applies to fitness. And last week I did a meditation workshop for this program, about getting women to go back to university and college at NSCC, the IT campus. So I did a meditation workshop for them. So I'm always up for doing those things for different groups.
So reach out to Grant. So I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's great to touch base. It's been a little while.
Yeah, it was my absolute pleasure to be here and to just talk with you, see you again, hang out a little bit.
And
to get to talk a little bit about some things that we're both passionate about.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And so you're listening to Mental Health. Let's Talk About It on CIOE 97.5 FM. And on behalf of myself and my producer, Jim Francis, be well.